It's a good afternoon, and welcome to this session, Delivering KPIs with Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. My name is Peter Myers. I'm a BI expert from Melbourne, Australia. I've been presenting at these events. In fact, this is my sixth TechEd North America. And I bring to you about 12, 13 years experience working with Microsoft Business Intelligence. Extremely passionate about analysis services and its capabilities to deliver data models. And I'm looking forward to sharing this experience with you in this session, specifically on what people think is a small part of analysis services, and that's the ability to define KPIs. But there's a little bit more that I'd like to share with you when it comes to not just defining KPIs, but preparing data and surfacing that data in a way that's going to make sense when using KPIs. So the objectives: to introduce what a KPI is, to describe how data can be prepared for KPIs, demonstrate the versatility of the product in how we can define and prepare and manage data, and then demonstrations on then how you can consume the KPI that is defined in your data model. Here's our session outline. Let's just get started with defining the key performance indicator. So in its briefest form, I think we can define it as a quantifiable measurement that compares business performance to goals. So we capture data that describes what is happening. That's pretty common in operational systems. What we need to know is how we're performing. And in order to do that, we need to perform a comparison between the actuals that we've collected to some target or some goal. And then we can assess whether we're on track or not. So a good example would be sales performance. This is what you sold according to the orders, but this is what you were expected to sell. And then the variance of that is either going to be favorable or unfavorable. You're on track or you're off track. Or maybe just slightly off track. So KPIs are a very powerful way of measuring performance. They're also a very powerful way of implementing change. If there's undesirable practices or behaviors, measuring people against a goal is a way of modifying their behavior. Okay, and let's think of this example. If I say that you need to achieve 500 units next month, and I measure you by that, that sounds like that's a great thing to do. It's going to motivate me to sell at least 500 units to be on track. Can anyone imagine the undesirable side effects that might come from implementing that type of KPI?
Pushing low-cost units or low-profit units.
Right. So we're pushing the fact that I have to sell a certain number of units. If I'm struggling to meet that quota, the next thing I'm going to do is start discounting. To meet that, sure, I'll just sell you them at half the price. So what would be a way to fix that problem to ensure that I'm not motivated to heavily discount?
By revenue.
By revenue or maybe profitability too. That a certain profit margin must be achieved. And there's a classic example of the power of KPIs to direct the right attention down to the individuals that are making the actions. Let's measure you on the sales. Let's also measure you at the same time that you're maintaining profit targets. Okay. Now, this is in itself a discipline. Performance management, you'll have experts out there that specialize in it. I'm an IT professional and I specialize in business intelligence. When I have customers that come to me and say, yes, we need KPIs, we need scorecards, tell us what our KPIs should be, I say, we stop right there. I say, once you've actually defined and approved what the KPIs will be that you need to measure, then I will help you find the data and define these KPIs and help you report on them. So just be very, very careful about the concept that KPIs are very powerful. You need to really understand what you're doing when you implement them. This is really the story about having decided and agreed what the KPIs are. This is how they'll be implemented. All right, they're designed to drive desired behavior. Be careful of side effects. And they present a measure of overall health when combined in a collection with a business scorecard. And that will be my final presentation to you this afternoon. Here's a good example of what a KPI could do. This is not a KPI, this is just a report about what salespeople actually sold. But you can see the added value that if we include here what you were expected to sell, that's adding some help. But it's making it a little bit more work than I would expect, because how do I know who is on track and who is not? I have to really look closely at each line. And that's where we could introduce a status. And then through color or through icon, we can convey whether expectations are being met, green, off track, red, and off track but not a concern or critical is the yellow that we see here. Now, analysis services supports the addition of a fourth metric that will be the trend. And typically it's used to convey whether that variance is improving or declining over time. So just a glance at this scorecard now, we can see that Rachel down there, not only is she off track, but the downward arrow is telling us she's getting worse over time. And yet at a glance we can see here that Lynn Sophlius, not only is she meeting expectation and exceeding it, but she's getting better over time. So I think you can immediately see the benefits of defining KPIs and then consistently reporting in this way, and then we can manage and filter by exception. Let's just focus where we've got the red status. Now, when it comes to preparing your data for a KPI, at minimum, the KPI is going to need an actual and a target for the comparison. And ideally, your corporate data systems will deliver both, but from my experience, this isn't always the case. Actuals are usually easy to source. Your operational systems will be capturing this data and with good integrity. Targets, however, could be more challenging. You may not have a planning system. You may not have some target stored for the purpose that you need. So in the absence of this, you can maintain your own target values, and we'll explore that today with the analysis services product. You can define KPIs with fixed targets, but I would strongly discourage that, because the moment you do so, someone's going to change their mind, and then you're going to have to change the KPI definition itself. Also be very careful that if you do store this in external store and you say, this table here with a single column, single row, it stores the target that we have for, you know, the number of complaints that we're measuring. And then you decide to change in the future, the fact is that historical reporting will be upset then, because it will be using the current definition against historical analysis. So I'd strongly suggest, even if you have that single data point, perform an ETL every day and copy it across into a fact table against a timestamp, so that you've got a history of what those values were across time. At this point, I can introduce analysis services and say that it comes with two components. There's the data modeling, which essentially we used to call cubes, but now that we have tabular models, I generically refer to it as tabular, or rather as just data models. So these represent intuitive resources. They provide high performance even over large volumes of data. They encapsulate business logic with calculations, and a special type of calculation is the key performance indicator. In fact, I like the definition when I first learned about them, was that a KPI really are four calculations for the price of one. As you'll learn, we have value, goal, status, and trend under a single name that represents the KPI object. And these objects are first-class objects within the data model itself. Now, with the two different development approaches, you can define KPIs in the multidimensional, or the cube as we refer to it, or the newer tabular approach supports them as well. There are a couple of differences I'll point out to you in this presentation. Generically, we call these data models BI semantic models. That's a bit of a mouthful. So typically for multidimensional, we talk about a cube and tabular, usually just a tabular model. Now, not known to a lot of people, we think about analysis services mainly as data modeling, but there is also a data mining component. And data mining as a technology allows us to discover patterns essentially in data. And those patterns can be very useful in delivering insight that would be difficult for the human to actually discover just by querying the data. And where you trust those patterns, you can use them in prediction scenarios as well. So that patterns happened in the past, it's likely to repeat in the future. So you'll see in this session that even the data mining component can have a role to play when it's preparing data for the KPI. Right, on to some demonstrations. I spent a lot of time with AdventureWorks, so it's refreshing to come up with a new data set. And I created this data set specifically to simplify a scenario so I could highlight what you could achieve with the products. So what I'm introducing to you here is the Frosty Ice Cream Company. This is a company that manufactures and sells four different flavors of ice cream. Along the bottom we see the legend of vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, and double chocolate. And this graph here is showing the months of fiscal year 2009 and the sales. There's a little more value in this graph because the color shading in the background sort of implies the seasons and the temperatures. So for the Northern Hemisphere, you'll see in December, January, these are the colder months, warmer months at the other ends. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, is that ice cream sales are going to be stronger in the warmer months. Okay, so this is what's happening in 2009. There's already an analysis services cube that is driving and storing the data for this report. Switch across to 2010, and so on. But what this system is lacking is the ability for me to monitor performance. How are the sales going? How is the profitability? Is it on track? All I can do at this stage is get basic fact about unit sales across time. So I've been tasked with the responsibility to update the system and to enhance it to store target values and then to perform analysis for 2012. So here I've got a script that's going to go ahead and extend the data warehouse by adding a new fact table for sales budget. Very straightforward from a dimensional point of view. We store at month level and at product level, and then we store a budget value that we want to achieve. So I go ahead and run this. Then I switch across to Visual Studio, and here I have my Analytics Services project. So I come in and extend the data source view. Add remove tables. There's the new table added in. And then I provide a more friendly name for that fact table, which is simply targets. Now that I have that, I can come across to the Cube Designer, and then I can introduce a new measure that is based on the targets table. And there's sales budget. The only update I need to do here is provide a format string. And then to support analysis and comparison between actual sales and the sales budget, I come into the calculation script of the cube. And then I've got a snippet here. It's going to allow me to extend it with calculations for sales variance and for sales variance percent. And now I can deploy. So switching across to the browser. We can see here on a filter for the two fiscal years of 2011 and 2012. Remember, 2012 is what I'm focusing on. And then here for vanilla, these are the results. Let me bring in the sales budget. And of course, we have no data. I've just created a table. It's empty. So the next part is to consider the four different flavors of products and the different ways that I can get planning budget information into the cube. For vanilla, as we might expect, it's a little bland. Well, not bland, it's actually my favorite flavor. But what I'm going to do is extend the cube with a scoped assignment here. And the scope says that for fiscal year 2012, for all the months within that year, where the product is vanilla, and for the sales budget measure, use this scoped assignment to override the natural values that would occur from the underlying data source by using this formula. And essentially it's saying go back 1 year, and whatever the sales were a year ago, that's what the budget will be for this current year. And as simple as that, when I've deployed and the script is updated, I really don't like this new browser. Has anyone experienced this in 2012 and above? We used to have a different experience here for testing the cube, but Microsoft have deprecated Office Web Components, and as such, the browser disappeared, and what we get is, for some, a familiar experience. Does anyone know where this designer comes from? The Analysis Services team borrowed it from somewhere else. I've got chocolate here, by the way. Incentives. Okay, this is the MDX query builder that came from Reporting Services. So I can bring in sales and budget. It just means I have to reconstruct the query every time. Year. So what happens is that when you reconnect, it clears your query pane. And then I had product. So what I'm able to show you here then is that for vanilla, we've got the prior year here, 2011. We had 142 sales achieved in July. And here we have for July in 2012 that you're expected to sell 142. So here's a scoped assignment simply saying last year's sales become this year's budget. There's a downside to this approach. Well, there's several, actually. There's no real data. It's just coming from a command that says, well, whatever the last period was. What do you think the biggest problem with this is from a point of view of the employees that are going to be motivated by this KPI? Are they going to take it seriously when all you're saying is you have to sell what you sold last year? And even if you do change your mind, how are you going to override this scoped assignment? The scoped assignment will always override, even if there's true data coming in from the fact table. So while you can do it this way, not a suggested way. If you do insist on using this approach that says, let's take last year's actuals and reuse them, maybe by using a multiplication factor, which is in fact what I'll do now for strawberry. You can do this, but I'd suggest that you go ahead and run a query like this that actually takes last year's and copies the data across into the fact table. The benefit of this is that you can manipulate the data, and other different experiences that may not connect to the cube can also reuse this data. So I go ahead and run this command, and that inserts 12 rows. We're using a factor of a 10% increase here. And then I just come across to the cube and to its targets measure group and process it. So now switching back here and querying strawberry. While we sold 212 units in July, with a 10% increase, you're expected for the next year to sell 233. So that's the second approach. And so we refer to this in planning as seeding. You can go ahead and seed the values, but you would expect it to run through a process whereby users, the employees' management, actually review and via negotiation, discuss and agree, and then they contribute this as the formal plan. So this is the starting point. Start with that 10% increase and then negotiate what it should be in line with the objectives that you need to meet. For the next product then, it's chocolate. I'm going to do something a lot more exciting, because with chocolate, we're going to leverage data mining. We've got all of this history about what the sales have been seasonally for the last couple of years, and surely there's some pattern in there that would allow us to forecast, perhaps with a higher degree of accuracy than my old gut instinct, what the chocolate values might become. So in this script here, I'm creating a view called vSalesByProduct. And essentially what it's doing is taking the history and it's pivoting it. What I'll have is a time index column, and then I'm going to have a column for each of the products and all of the sales that were achieved across time. And I come back to my analysis services project, and then I create a new data source view. Connecting to the same data warehouse, I bring in the view. And we'll call this sales time series. And if we explore the data here, we'll see here we have in chronological order the month key and sales for all of the four products. So this is the preparation that I would do in order to use the time series algorithm. And then I create a mining structure. Typically, this would not be in the same project. And I choose the time series algorithm based on that data source view. And then each row will become a case. And what we're looking to do then is to predict chocolate and double chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla. So one of the unique capabilities of Microsoft's implementation of the time series algorithm is that if you pass them in as inputs as well, it will look for cross predictions across the different series. What you might find is substitution happens, that as chocolate becomes more popular, strawberry becomes less. And so this can help define a more accurate and stable model. So having created the structure consisting of this single model, I come into the algorithm parameters. There's a couple of things I need to play around with here. Each algorithm has its own set of parameters. Now, another interesting fact about the time series algorithm is that in 2008 release, Microsoft introduced two algorithms for the one. So in fact, there's actually two algorithms that work by default, and you see the default of mixed here. It will blend the results together. We have ARTXP, autoregressive trees with cross prediction. Very, very good for short-term prediction. What is the next step in a time series, or the next couple of steps? But unfortunately, it becomes very unstable as it starts using its predictions for future predictions, and very quickly it becomes unstable. ARIMA was the new algorithm that was added in the 2008 release. So autoregression with integrated moving average, it's better for a longer-term stable projection. The blend of the both will give you the best of both. However, what I'm focusing on here is just the cross-prediction capabilities. So I force the algorithm to just use the one. Important for time series is you pass in the periodicity. It's monthly data. Every 12 rows will produce a new cycle. And so you need to tell it that. And now with that configuration, I redeploy my project. That will create the mining structure, it will process it, and then we can view the results. And here we see it. So for the four products, they're all graphed for me here. Let me just introduce the next 12 projections. And we're going to focus on chocolate. And that's what it looks like. Show deviations. If you see really long bars here, it's not terribly stable. It's suggesting that it hasn't found a strong enough pattern. But the small deviations I have here provides me certain confidence that these are reasonably accurate predictions. What's very cool about this algorithm is it uses the decision tree algorithm in the background as well. And so what we can see here is that when I switch across to chocolate, that here is the formula that it will use to predict the steps. We can see the chocolate then is equal to this constant of negative 37, and then we add what double chocolate was doing 24 months ago, multiplied by negative 4.89. And here's the cross prediction at work. All right, so it's going to use this formula to help predict the next 12 steps. And that's what we can achieve here with the prediction tab. Introducing a prediction function, predicting the time series, passing in chocolate, and requesting the number of steps, 12. And by running that, there's the result that I'm looking for. Okay, so how do we get it from here into the fact table? The first step is I modify the query just slightly. By using the flatten keyword, we end up with a set that looks like this, which technically is no different from a result set coming from a relational database. So I can now take this query, and it's defined in DMX, this is data mining extensions. And I'm going to use integration services to do the hard work here. So I already have pre-built a package. First thing that it does is according to a variable, and you see the variable here for year, currently set at 2012, it deletes any budgets in the fact table for chocolate for that year. Next, it uses the data flow and it connects to the analysis services instance, and there is the prediction query. Outputs that using a script because it doesn't understand the time keys that we're using. What it will do is use that variable of 2012, and by using a C# script here, it's just going to, every record that passes in, produce the appropriate time keys starting with month 7 for the fiscal year. Here with a derived column, it adds in the product key, which is 3 for chocolate, and it just rounds the budget to 0 decimal places. And then that gets inserted into the fact table. There we go, 12 rows. And then on success of that, the last thing in the control flow is it processes the target's measure group or partition. So now I can switch back to the cube browser and we should be able to query what's going on with chocolate. And there it is. Well, we had 599 in July. Your next July target is 719 according to the predictions. Double chocolate, best for last. So there's a great capability in analysis services with multidimensional called write-back. Has anyone worked with the write-back in the product before? It's very dark back there, I can't see much. So it's probably about 5 or 6 people from what I can see. And what I've discovered with this as a consultant is that a lot of people don't even know this feature exists. Be aware that it used to be Enterprise Edition only. What that means today is it's Business Intelligence or Enterprise Edition only in 2012. So on Standard Edition, you wouldn't have this capability. As the developer, I come to the Partitions tab. The sales partition and the targets partition. And I right click here and I turn on the write back. Now essentially what this is going to do is create a table with this name in my data source. The requirements in your design in order to use write back means that this measure group must only consist of measures that use the sum aggregate function, which is the case here. What will happen then is this partition represents the data from the fact table, this represents the data from the write-back table, and it combines the two when you're querying it. Let me deploy that. Anyway, switch across and show you in the data warehouse for frosty ice cream, I now have this right back table. Naturally, there's nothing in it. So the question is, how do we write back to the cube? What tool do we have available to us? And one of the great features with pivot tables that was added in Excel 2010 and is still supported in 2013 is that a pivot table can support write back. So one thing that I won't do in the demo, but you would typically create a role in your database that is going to grant write privileges to the people that can contribute into the cube. So let's just assume that's taken place. Switching back to Excel then, I have a write back sheet here. And I go ahead and insert a pivot table. I already have a workbook connection that the pivot table report was using. And then I define this by saying, let's look at sales budget. Let's bring in fiscal on the rows. And I'll place product across the columns. And there's the values that have been contributed one way or another for the other three products. Where's double chocolate? Not there? Why not there? Default behavior of a pivot table is that if there are empty columns or empty rows, they won't show up. Okay, we have no values for double chocolate. So if I turn this on, show items with no data on columns, there's the double chocolate. So this could be your opportunity. Having seeded the other products, we could use pivot tables to go ahead and then manage the values, modify them according to what we need to do to finalize our budget. So I could come in here and say, well, 156 doesn't seem quite right. Let's make this 150. And hey, hold on a minute. Pivot tables are read-only. You can't do this. In order to work with WriteBack, you need to come to your OLAP tools here on the Analyze tab and enable what-if analysis. The other thing I like to turn on is the automatic calculate changes. So you can see the changes happen in the pivot table like this. Now I can modify that to 150. But something odd happens. Even though I submitted 150, it's still 156. Any ideas why? Haven't committed it. Okay. So if I come to OLAP Tools up here and I have permission to do this, I'll publish the change. Now just to prove that's happened, here in the write back table we see this negative 6. But still, I see here it's 156. Scoped assignment, of course. It doesn't matter what the true value is coming from the underlying fact table. The scoped assignment always overrides it, which is why it's probably not a great idea to do this. Let's see what happens with strawberry. So if I come in here and change this to 300, that sticks. Go ahead, publish. It's now 300 because the addition of the fact table value and 23 gives us the 300. So note here what the fact table or the write back table is doing. By the dimensionality of month key, product key, we have a value, and then we have audit information of who and when. Now it gets cooler because of the hierarchy that I have here. I could come in and say, I want chocolate to be 2100 for the fiscal quarter. And the default behavior is it will always write down to the lowest granularity, but it will use equal weighting. So 2100 divided by the three children, they each get 700. Cool. So when it comes to double chocolate, we know that we need to achieve 7,000 for the entire fiscal year. But would it make sense here, especially with our understanding of seasonality, to actually distribute that equally? Probably not. What we have here under settings is the ability to use weight expressions. So what I intend to do is distribute whatever value, in this case 7,000, by the ratio of what was actually sold in the prior year across what was sold for each month. So for each month, divide by the total for the year, and that's how we'll distribute it. And this is how it's achieved. I have some MDX here. This is my weight allocation formula. So on the numerator, it's basically saying in this tuple, go and retrieve sales, and then for whatever the current member on the fiscal hierarchy is, which must be a month because that's the granularity of this measure group. So otherwise, get the month and go back 12 and get the sales for that. That's the numerator. And then divide by the sales, whatever your current member is, which is a month, at the ancestor level of year. Get the entire year and then go back to the previous member. In other words, the prior year. And if you can appreciate for the 12 months that we'll be allocating to for double chocolate, it will then execute this and multiply it by the value that we're writing back at year level. Do that. Let's just make sure that's stuck. Undo. What happened? Oh yeah, thank you. Settings. Use the weighted allocation, which I have here. That's what I'm looking for. And then go ahead and publish those changes. So be aware, once you publish it, immediately anyone else that's connecting to this cube will see those values. And there we see in total there are 17 rows of data that represent each write back. Okay, so the next question is, once we've gone ahead and approved these values, I'd prefer that they were permanent parts of the data warehouse, not sitting in some write back table. So what I choose to do here is to, within a transaction, is to merge into the fact sales table. And basically, if we have got that product month combination, then go ahead and add whatever the incremental changes that's been written back. Otherwise, go ahead and insert a whole new row into the fact table. And then within this transaction, delete everything that's in the write back table. And at that point, I would go ahead and reprocess the entire targets measure group that will process both the targets and the write back targets partition. And then my last step within this first demonstration is to jump ahead and say, well, these are the sales that were actually achieved in 2012, so I have some actuals to compare against it. And then I'll process the entire sales measure group. Actually, I don't think I need to show you that. We're going to be reporting on it in the next section. Okay, so that's the basics about how analysis services can represent your data and what you might do to prepare the planning values. We looked at scoped assignment. I would give that the thumbs down. Taking last year's actuals, multiplying by a factor, adding it to the fact table, that's a good start. Using data mining to detect patterns and leverage those to predict what could be happening. And then finally using writeback, where you can modify those values or you can contribute direct via the pivot table. So the next section then is how we define the KPI object itself in multidimensional and tabular models. Multidimensional first, KPIs are defined as part of the cube definition. Your four main properties consist of value, goal, status, and trend. These are all defined by using MDX, that's multi-dimensional expressions. And then there are additional properties, like the status graphic, the trend graphic that should be used to convey the representation of the value. So be aware that analysis services does not actually store the graphics, it stores text labels for graphics, and it's the responsibility of the client application to have a library of images that map to those labels. Excel already has these. Pivot tables will automatically represent them. You can create hierarchies of KPIs. You can have different weightings for KPIs. This one is twice as important as this when you roll them up the hierarchy. And you can associate them with measure groups. You can also modify their time context. So be aware that for the status and trend, your MDX needs to return a normalized value between 1 and negative 1. And so essentially what you're going to do is come up with your status indicator choice. If you choose a tri-state indicator that has three states, typically on track, off track, and slightly off track, you're going to map them to 1, 0, negative 1. And it's client applications that will understand how to translate an icon to the number that they retrieve. Trend is the same. 1 is getting better, 0 is no change from the prior period, negative 1 is that we're getting worse than the last period. So in my cube project, I'm going to define two KPIs. Here on the KPIs tab, I create a new KPI, and this one will be for sales performance. Here's the value, goal, status, and trend, and I simply take the sales is my value, and from my targets measure group, I have the sales budget. My choice of status indicator will be shapes, and then when it comes to the status expression, I'm going to use some MDX that I'll copy and paste from here. Essentially says, well, if you don't have a sales budget, return nothing, but if the sales variance percent is greater than zero, then one, we're on track. If it's greater or equal to -15%, and then it's less than zero, then we're zero, we're slightly off track. Everything else is off track. Okay, for the trend, I'll stick with the standard arrow. And the trend expression then is using this statement. So essentially, if the sales variance percent is greater than the sales variance percent but for the previous member on your fiscal time period, then go ahead and return one. Things are getting better. If it's the same, return zero, otherwise negative one. Okay, those additional properties are available by expanding this area, but I won't work with them today. Deploy. For KPIs that you define in this way, you can then browse them by using this browser view. We used to be able to work with them with the old browser tab, but that's no longer available. So this is one approach. Come in, a filter. So I'm going to filter by fiscal period 2012 quarter four, and also by a product. I'll choose chocolate. So we can see for quarter four, value goal, status is slightly off track and getting worse than the prior quarter. What happens if we look at the months? So in April, we're well off track and getting worse. In May, things are improving, getting better, and only slightly off track. And I think there's a good news story here that by June, we're on track and getting better. Okay, so that's one way to define the KPI and the most common way that you would do it. It is also possible on the calculations script to also define KPIs. So for completeness, I'm going to include that. The first thing that I do here is create a new calculated member, which is the sales profit goal. This is not really a recommended approach. For the goal for profitability, I'm really hard coding it in this calculation. Don't repeat this in the real world. It just allows me to show you something. So essentially, it tests the product. If it's vanilla, your target's 10%. For chocolate, 5%. Double chocolate, 7.5%. Note that this is not a visible measure. No one will see it, but it's going to be used by my KPI. And then the KPI can be created on the script by using the create KPI statement. And everything you can do in the UI has been done here in script. Does anyone know why Microsoft added this capability in 2008, the need to script a KPI? Another feature came out in 2008 called the Analysis Services Personalization Extensions that you can define by using a .NET assembly. You can interrogate the authenticating user, and dynamically you can extend the definition of the cube according to who they are. This could be driven through metadata. All right, so it's possible to add a KPI that only some users will see by using the personalization extensions, and that's why they allowed you to create them through script. A downside of creating them through script is that you can't use the cube browser to test them, like I just did. So by adding these in and deploying, they're now part of the cube definition, but here on the cube browser, you won't see that KPI. All right, that's defining KPIs in the cube. When it comes to tabular development, KPIs can also be defined, whether this is Power Pivot or a tabular project. The actual metric must be based on an existing measure. So the way that the UI works, you have a measure, right-click, create KPI, and then you will define the target that it's compared to, which is either another measure or calculated field in the model, or it can be an absolute value. Student exam scores. The exam's out of 80, that's the target. The status metric is then defined by setting thresholds. So it's probably easier for me to actually show you this in demonstration. That's what the UI looks like. But note that unlike multidimensional KPIs, there's no trend metric. So a KPI in Tabular consists of just the three: actual, goal, and status. So to demonstrate this one, I actually have a Power Pivot workbook that has an identically structured model from what the cube is doing. So what I do here is I come to the targets table, and I have sales budget. And if I right-click it and create a KPI, this is where I define what its target is. Actually, it's the other way around, isn't it? Sales, create KPI. And basically, it takes sales and divides it by sales budget. If they equal, it'll be 1. If sales exceeds budget, it's going to be something greater than 1, or the other way around. And then you would use the thresholds here to determine 85%, 100%. And then you choose your status icon here. No trend. Under descriptions here, you can put text annotations that might show up in a client application. The other downside I see with defining them this way is that you don't have the power you do in cubes with MDX to come up with whatever expression makes sense. So you're actually quite restricted in the way that you define a KPI in the tabular approach. Okay, there's my demonstrations in creating KPIs in a cube and one in a Power Pivot workbook. So the next point is, well, now that we have KPIs defined, how can we leverage them in user experiences? And so we're going to take a look at Excel with Excel services, Power View, reporting services, and Performance Point services, a product that is dedicated to delivering KPIs through scorecards. So delivering with Excel and Excel services, the easiest approach is just through the pivot table. The less easy approach, but with much more control, is to use the cube functions to lay out cell by cell how you want those KPIs to be represented in your report. And new in Excel 2013, we have apps for Office. And the good news here is that there's a free app that you can acquire that is the gauge. And you can provide this animated gauge embedded within your workbook. When you publish these to SharePoint and you have Excel services, then these can be calculated and rendered server-side and delivered back through the web browser. So you can essentially build dashboard experiences within Excel, publish these workbooks, secure them in SharePoint, and then single version of the truth with both your data model and the reporting experiences delivered through Excel. Let's see this in demonstration. So back to the frosty ice cream example that I started with. For a pivot table, that's pretty straightforward. Come in, insert a pivot table, connecting to the sales analysis cube. And here on the right, I have the field list. KPIs have their own little grouping. So I can say, bring in the value, goal, status, trend. And here it is. And I prefer to rename these. Bring in the fiscal hierarchy. Let's just filter and keep only 2012. And then expand right down to the month level. To provide the ability to filter by product, I just go and add product as a slicer. And so now we can analyze performance by product and see what's happening month by month. Okay, now the great news about that is that KPI is defined once. It doesn't matter who's connecting, how they're constructing their pivot table. They will see the right response. In the next worksheet is the freeform approach, and I'm a huge fan of these cube functions, and I still discover that so many people, even cube developers, are not aware that since Excel 2007, there are these 7 native functions that allow you to connect to a data model, whether it's a cube or a tabular model, and that you can extract members and values and place them wherever you want within the worksheet. See, pivot tables are great. They're fast, they're flexible, but they don't allow you complete customization to lay out how you want that report to look. So what I have before me here is a partially complete report. For sales monitoring, I allow someone to pass in a year, to choose a product, even to choose the KPI that they want to report from. And note that for each of these three cells that I have a named range. I have year, I have product, and I have KPI. Sitting in cell A7, I'm using a cube set function that connects to the cube, and then using this MDX. Go and get the snippets for and see the dynamic construction of this expression, passing in the fiscal year in cell B3 to produce this MDX that will return a set of the 12 months that belong as descendants to that fiscal year. The last part that gets passed in here is a caption that gets displayed back in the cell, and this is why we see the word month here. Down here in cell A8, I use the cube ranked member function. Get me the ranked member from the set, and the set there is cell A7, and then get me the first one. Row A1 returns 1. Row A2 returns 2, and so on. So this became a formula that I could just copy and paste, and it retrieves those 12 members. Lastly, for the total, this is just using some MDX that says retrieve according to that fiscal year. I could have used Excel to actually aggregate and sum those 12 rows, but you want to be careful that some cube developers can actually override the natural aggregation behavior for usually good reasons. So you should always use the member, the fiscal year total, according to what the cube knows. So to complete this report, I can use the cube KPI member. The IntelliSense here is really quite clever. So when I press tab, it's introducing the workbook data connection that's already defined. And then it introduces to me the KPIs that it discovered. Now, instead of using a KPI, I'm going to pass in this cell here. It's going to be dynamic according to what the user wants to see. And then next, by an enumeration, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, what member for the KPI do you want to retrieve? So I'm going to go for number 1, which is the value. And then I'm going to provide a caption that will appear in that cell. Now, this error, it's not really an error, but what happens is that KPI definition followed after this workbook was opened and connected to the cube. What it does is it caches the definition of the structure of the cube, so it requires me to come in here and refresh. And now it says, I do understand there's a KPI, and yes, I can do this. Now, if I copy this formula across and I modify each of these from 1 to 2, this then becomes my goal. Number 3 gives me the status, and number 4, the trend. So the last step in completing this report is by using the cube value function. And the cube value function, via a connection, it's a comma-separated list of filters. I'm going to filter by a month that's on the column A. I'm going to filter by a KPI member that's at the column. And then I'm also going to filter by the product that they're requesting, in this case, vanilla. So I select cell A8. And then I like this little tip, F4. Did you know if you keep pressing F4, you get all the combinations of absolute relative? So what I want to do is lock in A and keep 8 relative. And the reason that I do this is if I can create one formula that I can copy across and down, I don't have to then edit each cell. That will filter by the month. To filter by the column, is it B7 or it's going to be B$7? And then finally to bring in the product, and here's the IntelliSense I could have used. And I could have bought in vanilla this way, but I produce a dynamic expression. And there we see for 2012 for vanilla, sales in July was 142. And now I can simply copy this across and copy it down. And don't override my formatting so that I can preserve the formatting across here. So everything looks great with the exception of our status and trend, because that's what the cube delivers. When it's queried, it's 1, 0, negative 1. By the way, KPIs can have different levels of graduations. You might have a 10 level one, so you might have different values, you know, 1.9, 0.8, and so on. To work with this, and to achieve what the pivot table achieved here automatically, it's using the conditional formatting that Excel supports. So selecting this range, I come across and apply conditional formatting by using icon sets. So an unfortunate part about this is If a Cube developer said it should use this icon set, the Excel developer here can override that with whatever they choose. Managing this rule, I can then turn off the value by saying, just show the icon. And then I need to explain the rule about how it maps the icons to the different values. So I change it to a numeric mapping. If it's greater or equal to 1, it's going to be the green. Greater or equal to 0, it's the yellow. Everything else is red. And then I center it. And that's essentially what the pivot table is doing automatically by querying for the icon type and then applying conditional formatting. So I can just go ahead and copy that across to here. And then I can just override the choice of icon. Okay. Now, if a user comes in here and changes this to strawberry, then it all just works, updates. Even changing the KPI, sales profit. And note the formatting. Even the conditional formatting of color there for April for the value flows through from the cube. Impressive? These are a lifesaver. Believe me, especially we've got legacy reports and they need the report to look exactly like it did now that we're using Power Pivot cube functions. Question?
Can you turn V4 and 5 into pick lists?
Yes, you can. So the question about could you use a pick list here, so I could come over here and say this is sales performance. This is sales profit. And then I could come here and say data validation.
Well, I meant from the cube.
From the cube. No, you can't. But you know what? What I would like to see here is the ability to say a cube set function can be passed in here. So it's dynamic. Whatever the cube set is will become the drop-down list. And I've made that recommendation to the product team. I hope they're listening. All right. Now, if I do this, and then I say the source is this, and then you hide this column, then you've pretty much achieved it. Okay, however, downside, if you're going to publish this to SharePoint, Excel services will not render that, unfortunately. Okay, so the new feature in Office 2013 that I think is very, very cool is the ability to insert apps for Office. Okay, so I've already gone ahead and acquired a Gauge application. These are HTML5 applications using JavaScript, CSS, REST APIs. And this allows you to extend your report writing beyond the Excel capabilities. So what I'm going to do here is create a ratio equals this divided by this. So we've met 98.16% of our goal. I'm then going to multiply that by 100 and then round the whole lot to one decimal place. So 98.2. And then when I come is, I say, well, that app for Office, insert a gauge based on that value there, and then go ahead and configure that the range will be from 25 to 145. The green range will be 100 to 145. Now, unfortunately, this is not driven by the definition that the cube developer did. So unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily map to what the intention was. Okay, and then as I go ahead and change this to chocolate, how cool is that? And Excel services will render these. If the SharePoint administrator has enabled this, published this, and it will be rendered into the web browser. That's Excel and Excel services. PowerView. So PowerView is available now as a reporting option in Excel 2013. It's been available since the SQL Server 2012 release with reporting services in SharePoint. So what's new in the latest release is that KPIs are available in the field list and they can be represented in your reports. Let me demonstrate. So insert PowerView sheet. By default, it will be based on the Power Pivot model in your workbook, of which I don't have one. So it's actually gone ahead and used the range. That's not what I intended. Delete. let me come across to my PowerView workbook where I added the KPI earlier. I don't think I added it, did I? Okay, so now that I have the KPI, home, insert a pivot table in the existing sheet. And that's not what I'm demoing. Insert PowerView. And then we should see here in the targets that there's the KPI. Nope, that's the PowerView field list. There it is. So in this table, go ahead and give me product, value, goal, and status. And there it is. So that's what's new now surfaced through PowerView. Next, reporting services. There are two visualizations that can help you when it comes to status and trend. They consist of the indicator and the gauge. We've had the gauge since 2008, and the indicators, I think, came in 2008 R2. So I've pre-built a report to the point that I've got a layout and I've got a data connection. What I'm going to do is add a data set. And then construct a query consisting of product, of both KPIs, so I have sales performance. Note this by dragging the KPI, I get the four metrics being copied across, and then the sales profit. In addition, I need some other measures, so I bring in sales variance and variance percent. I'm going to allow users to filter by a time period. So I'll bring in the quarter, and we'll filter by 2012 quarter one. So what we're seeing now is that the four products and the four metrics for both KPIs and some additional calculations for variance. When you scroll across here, you have the ability to parameterize. So that's going to allow automatically a parameter be created, and then users can interact and modify the members that get passed into the filter. Now, when you come back and look at the dataset properties under fields, I like to clean this up a little bit. I don't know why it puts an underscore after status. I just get rid of it. I have no idea. And this one down here, the percent symbol that was part of the member name is not supported in reporting services objects, so I actually put the word percent in there. And now with these fields, I can lay out my report. Let's introduce from that connection, that data set, the name of the product, and then for sales, I'm going to insert from my visualizations an indicator. Let's choose this one for consistency, and then by clicking it, I can then say which field of the data set will be used, and it will be the sales performance status. Remember, that's a value of 0, 1, or negative 1. But then to configure that properly, I come to the indicator properties. And here under values and states, I say that it's a numeric measure. And then I just need to map the ranges. So for red, it's going to be somewhere between negative 1 and negative 1, then map it to red. 0 and 0, 1 and 1. So now when we run this report, defaulting to the first quarter of 2012, we get to see each of the products and the status. Now it's my belief that that really doesn't convey enough information, because the next thing is, if it's not on track, you want to know some statistics about it. So what you can do is edit the indicator and use the tooltip property here. So when they hover over it, a tooltip will pop up additional information. So I have a snippet for this one. Essentially what it's doing is building up this long string. Sales, tab, tab. Format the sales performance value, and then put in a carriage return, and so on. So now we run this, and we see the result. We just hover here to get the information that helps us answer our questions. Now, for the second KPI, remember this importance. It's one thing to measure performance on meeting quota, but are they maintaining profitability? So seeing them side by side is pretty important. For this visualization, I'll use a gauge. And we have radial and linear gauges. I'll choose the first linear. And then for the point here, I'm going to specify that that will be the sales profit value. Now, I'm going to create an expression that will multiply that by 100 in recognition that it's a percentage value. I'm going to multiply it out. Next, we have a range. So I'm going to edit that scale, and I'm going to say go from negative 20 up to 20 with increments of 5. And then to convey status, are we on track, off track, I then add a range and edit its properties. The lower end is negative 20, but the upper end, if you can recall, the profitability was different for each product. So the goal is what we want to then use as the upper range of the gauge range. And so I come in here with an expression that says, we'll go ahead and use the sales profit goal and multiply by 100. And there we see it side by side. So what can we deduce from this? Vanilla's on track and profit is also meeting expectation, in fact exceeding it. So that's all healthy. Double chocolate in contrast. Sales are not meeting expectation and profit margin, boy, about minus 12%. Okay, things are seriously wrong. Any questions about reporting services there? Okay, last topic. So these are just Microsoft products, by the way. There are other products out there that can query and represent KPIs. But the product that is probably most strongly identified with performance management is Performance Point Services. Began as a standalone product. From 2010 SharePoint, it became a service application. And its strength is about defining and representing KPIs and scorecards, and that answers the how questions. How are we going? And then if you need to analyze, especially when things are not meeting expectation, we have reports and we can assemble dashboards that bring together an experience of filtering scorecards and reports side by side. So there's a little bit to this product. I mean, Microsoft see this as a self-service BI product. In fact, that slide's in the wrong place. No, it's not. Oh, I thought I had another slide here. But there are 7 components that build up a dashboard, from data sources to KPIs to the indicators that KPIs use to graphically represent values. KPIs are embedded into scorecards, and that's the monitoring component. You then have reports, and reports can consist of reporting services reports, Excel services reports, analytic grids, analytic charts that provide interactive experiences within a zero footprint web client. Visio diagrams can also be placed inside your dashboards. Okay, let's see this one in demo. So I've already pre-built here in Dashboard Designer much of the groundwork. I already have a connection that connects to my analysis services cube. And the next step is to go ahead and create the KPI. So the way that you would usually do this is come in and create a scorecard. And then you see this analysis services template, that when you use it based on an analysis services connection, you then have the ability to either create KPIs based off the existing measures that are found in the data model, or you can import the KPIs that already exist there. Now, I've never been happy with the word import, because to me that implies it's copying the definition of the KPI itself. Really what it's doing is creating a KPI that binds to and queries the KPI. It doesn't store the definition of it, it just knows how to query to get the value, goal, status, trend. Now, there's a bug here, unfortunately, that when I attempt to do this, it won't work. So I'm going to have to do manually what the wizard would usually do on your behalf. So we cancel this wizard. Create a KPI from scratch. And this is essentially what the wizard does. Your KPI consists of an actual and a target metric by default. For the actual metric, instead of using a fixed value of 1, I change the data source by using this data connection, and then I use an MDX tuple formula. KPI value. And then within parentheses, I pass in the name of the KPI. And that's how it knows to retrieve the actual value. In MDX, we have a KPI value function. Copy this. From a formatting point of view, let's just format that as a number, zero decimal places. And then for the target, the same thing. Map across to the same data connection. And instead of using the KPI value function, I use the KPI goal function. Now, for targets, they are compared to actuals, and you then need to specify what's good, what's bad, what's slightly bad. And so for analysis services KPIs, you will configure the threshold to use a stated score. In other words, you're telling Performance Point that you're going to retrieve a value of 1, 0, or negative 1. It needs to know where to get that value from. So having made a decision about the indicator that you're using, we then create a data mapping. And then we specify that this will be the KPI status. And then we can map those values to the different levels. Finally, we give it a name. And everything that I've just done here is what that import wizard is supposed to do for you for each KPI that you import. Actually, there's one more thing that it does do. Where does trend come in? Well, you add a new target and you call it trend. It doesn't matter what value the trend actually shows because you won't display that. But then you come down here and you do the same thing. It's a stated score. The icons that I use will be there's got to be some arrows somewhere. Let's just use these. And then the data mapping, you probably guessed it, we'll use the KPI trend function. And that's what the import wizard will do for you. So now that I have this KPI for sales performance, the next step is, for reporting purposes, go ahead and create a scorecard. Instead of using the analysis services template, I go ahead and create a blank scorecard. And then I manually build the scorecard up. Bring in my KPI. There's the three metrics placed automatically. And when I click update, it queries live data and shows me this is what the KPI will look like. Okay, I'm not interested in trend, so I'm actually going to go ahead and delete it. I'm interested in target, but for the design of this dashboard, as you'll see, I'm going to edit the metric and say, don't show me the value or a variance. All I want to see is the status indicator. And then because we have four products, and I'd like to see them broken out, I drag the product hierarchy and add them as children to the KPI. And because we may add new flavors like caramel and mint in the future, I'm going to be dynamic about the way this is done. Select all products, and at query time, it will just query whatever is available. And now we see a breakdown by product. Be very careful not to interpret anything at this stage because we're not filtering by a time period. I've got lots of actuals, even historical, but I've only got budgets for 2012. This is not a fair comparison. Next, some colors and some underline to let a user know that there's an action. If they click on a product, it's going to do something, which is what I'll configure in the dashboard. Finally, I give it a name, sales performance scorecard, and I save it. So already in this project then, I have a KPI embedded into a scorecard. I have a report here that I've already built based off the model. This report is showing me months on the columns, measures like sales, sales budget. And note here in the background that I have fiscal hierarchy and product. The background allows you to filter what's seen in the report, and as you'll see when I assemble the dashboard, is it will pass values into those backgrounds. So the last step in this demonstration is to produce a new dashboard. The template gives me a header and a left and right column. Typically, scorecard on the left, report on the right. This will be my main page. You could have multiple pages in the dashboard. Today, just the one. And I place the quarter filter in the header, my sales performance scorecard in the left column, and the sales details in the right. The last step then is to create connections between them to allow values to flow. When I select a filter value, I want it passed to the scorecard, I want it passed to the report. So the deal is this. Values can always be sent from filters. Reports can only receive values, but scorecards can do both. They can have filter values passed in, and they can pass values to reports. So we're going to take advantage of that. For the first one, I will take the member unique name from the quarter filter, and I'll just drop it onto the scorecard. Now, by default, it wants to filter the entire scorecard at page level. But I'm going to go ahead and say, put whatever they select on the columns. And then we can intercept that member by using a connection formula. And the token here that is unique name represents the member that they're filtering by. So I use my MDX and say, choose the children of that quarter. In other words, put the months of that quarter across the columns. Next, I take that same filter and I pass it across to filter the sales detail report. And you can see here the two backgrounds that I had. And then lastly, if a user selects one of the products in the scorecard, then that is the unique member on the row. Drop that in, and then we filter by connecting to the product background of the report. And that completes the layout of the dashboard. Close enough. Okay, save it, and then this object gets deployed to SharePoint. And when you deploy it to a library in SharePoint, what it does is create a folder. For each page in the dashboard, it creates a web part page. And essentially what you've been doing with the zones and the objects you've passed in there is building up a layout with web parts. So let's go ahead and filter on quarter one of 2012. And there we can see our KPI in action, broken down by product, actual and target for the 3 months of that quarter. Everything's looking good. What about quarter four? Okay, a problem with chocolate. So I go ahead and select chocolate. We can see that the context has been passed across here. Here's chocolate for fiscal year 2012. Not sure why it's so small. I could choose to export it to PowerPoint or Excel or open a new window. And in doing so, I could go ahead and convert this to a chart. So I can select measures, just show me sales and budget. And let's switch this across to a chart. Pivot that so that I've got the months on the columns. And here I'm able to assess month by month. What were they supposed to sell? What did they sell? All right, so the cool thing about this is it's just a web browser. Any supported web browser by SharePoint, be it Safari, Firefox, or Internet Explorer, you don't need to have anything else installed. And yet there's enormous interactivity capabilities here to filter, drill across, sort, add other measures, subtract measures, change the report type from a chart to a grid, and back again. So this is essential when you consider that things aren't on track and you need to understand why. We use the associated reports to explore and discover root cause. And that's Performance Point Services, and that completes the demonstrations on how to surface those analysis services KPIs in different ways. Okay, so in summary, analysis services, I hope I've proven to you here, is a versatile product that can be used for performance management, whether it's storing and preparing your actual and target data and encapsulating the logic that defines that single version of the truth about what your KPI is there to represent. KPIs can be defined in both multidimensional and tabular models. The KPI target data can be used to forecast. Data mining can be used to forecast and help you seed values for your targets. And also the write-back capability, which I think is so cool, and in conjunction with Excel and the pivot tables, is perhaps an easy first step way for you to introduce and manage the way that you collect, approve, review, and finalize your budgets. Finally, KPIs can be delivered by using Excel, PowerView, reporting services, and Performance Point services. There's related content. There's some other sessions that might help you get more out of the product, including working with tabular models, and otherwise the standard resources, TechNet, MSDN, and the learning. Track resources as well. What's very important to us at this event is your feedback, what you thought, helps us best pitch the material for future events. So we really encourage you to A, stand a chance of winning an Xbox, and to let us know what you think of this session. So on that note, thank you very much for your time and attendance. I've got about 1 minute left. I'd be happy to take questions offline out front if you've got some. But otherwise, thank you for your time and attendance, and appreciate very much if you could evaluate the session. Thank you.